I'm going to throw that up there. We are getting to the end of May, and summer is upon us, which means, I know, just lots and lots of activities going on, especially with the kids. Family's going away for vacation, all kinds of camps going on. So I just want you to remember, in the midst of all of that, there's one really important week. What is it, Jeff? About the third week in June. A lot of stuff going on for the kids here at Kleinwood, starting with VBS. That's the week of the 23rd, Monday through Thursday. And then Friday and Saturday is our annual teen weekend for the older young people here. And we're real excited about Bill Sanchez coming. He's going to work with this theme we've been reading all year from the prophets and work in some lessons from the prophets for our kids to help make that relevant and applicable for them and their lives. And so just some really important stuff coming up right there around that third week of June. I know summer is busy, folks, but we need you to mark out that slot. Don't plan your vacation that week. And make sure the kids are part of this. It'll be a really, really great week of study. It's nice when other people come, but this is really something we do for the benefit of our kids. And so really important that we get them there for that. So you can help us with that. Mark that out in your schedule. Make sure that your kids can be here for VBS and Teen Weekend. On August 11th of 2000, the local paper in Worcester, England, carried a story about a couple in their town, Douglas and Margaret Hemming. Evidently, what went down was a local reporter learned that it was going to be their 50th wedding anniversary. And so he went and interviewed them and did a little story for them in the newspaper. For you young people, that's back in the day when the news was printed on paper and delivered to houses and stuff. They actually met at the wedding of Douglas' brother in 1949. And a year later, they were married themselves. They both said that they had enjoyed a great life together, but they added this. They said they had to work hard at it. In fact, Douglas lamented that younger people didn't seem to work at marriage. He says nothing comes easy. Young people only have to have a little bit of trouble and they split. They don't stick at it, he said. I have no idea today how I found that article almost 25 years ago now, but Douglas' comments about marriage have stuck with me for the last two decades and more. I think it's easy to look at people who have been married a long, long time, 50 years, and to imagine to ourselves that somehow they were able to do that because it was easier for them. And I actually think Douglas and Margaret were griping a little about that. I think we sell people short when we say that. I suspect marriages that lasted 50 years exactly for the reason Douglas said. You've got to work hard at it. And yet I imagine that is not the first time you've ever heard somebody say something like that. That marriage is work. Sometimes it's hard work. And if we want a marriage that thrives and endures, we have to work hard at it. The question I want to ask this morning is, what does that really mean? I mean, I'm talking about at my house on Monday and Tuesday. What does it look like to work hard on a marriage? And so that's where I'd like for us to go this morning. I'd like us to take Douglas' comment and work a little deeper in that spot and see if we can figure out what that all really means. This morning, what I really want us to do is to explore the tough side of love. When it's difficult to love each other, what is that hard work that we do that brings us together and makes this relationship work? So I chose as my title this morning, Ground Rules for a Great Marriage. What I want to do is just kind of put a foundation, a biblical foundation, underneath the marriage and talk a little bit about what it takes to make a marriage thrive and endure. And so I want to begin with this. The first ground rule that occurred to me when I thought about all of this is that I have to always make sure that I obey God. Can we begin with that? I must obey God. And I know you're sitting there thinking this morning, maybe you are, you're thinking, that's so obvious. Why does that need to be on the list, right? I mean, David, you just could have assumed that and saved us some time this morning. We really only need 5 ground rules, right? I will acknowledge that that is really obvious. If we will all acknowledge that very often this is the thing that's missing. In fact, it is the number one reason marriages flounder and fail and are in trouble, because people are not obeying God. And so I want to begin there. I must obey God. Once I decide to follow Jesus, that decision then impacts everything else that goes on in my life. And I hope if you were here last Sunday, you are hearing echoes from last week's lesson. Do you hear that? If you're not, can I throw the wheel back up there? Remember this? We talked about how Jesus goes in the middle and then he influences all of our relationships and all the other responsibilities. We even had it on the list right there, right? He's got to determine what happens in my relationship with my spouse. Someone was thinking, were you thinking about that all together? I absolutely was. I even thought about preaching this lesson last week, and I thought, probably not smart on Mother's Day, right? Start messing with people's marriage. So, but only waited a week. Here you go. Here it is. It's one of those relationships that we were talking about where I have to do what Jesus wants me to do. So remember folks, that God is the creator. I'm going to make Jeff happy this morning. Go back to Genesis, right? Because it all begins there, right, Jeff? Genesis chapter 2, or Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. God made man in his own image. He is our creator, and that truth carries weighty implications. It means if he made me, I'm his. I belong to him. He has a right to rule, authority. He has that over me because he is the creator, and he has told us what he wants. Think about the lesson now going back 3 or 4 weeks. We talked about the work of the Holy Spirit to provide that revelation you have sitting in front of you this morning, that book or on your device. You're looking at what God provided so we would know what the Creator wants. And I am accountable to that message. Scripture tells us over and over again, there is a day of accountability coming. 2 Corinthians 5:10, we all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ. God has said some stuff, and one day I will answer for what he said in the book. Did I do the stuff that he told me to do? And Jesus would tell us in Matthew 25 and verse 46, everything's hanging in the balance, depending on how that judgment comes out. This is where heaven or hell enters the picture. I go to one place or the other based on whether or not I did the will of the Father. Matthew 7 and verse 21, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father will enter, right? I hope as you're hearing that, you're saying to yourself, we've heard that before. I hope you're saying that. I tried to think, Jeff, how many times over the last 4 years you and I working together that we've talked about a biblical worldview. And I've just run through the basic pieces of that. Did you catch that? It undergirds everything. This is how disciples see the world. That's why it's so important to acknowledge that there is a God and that he said something. And I'm responsible to do what he says. It influences everything. Which brings me back to ground rule number one. I have to obey God. I don't get to practice potluck obedience. Surely most everybody sitting in this church building this morning at some point has been to a church potluck, right? With the big tables lined up and all the food laid out there, right? You've been to a church potluck. How do you eat at a church potluck? I tell you what I do. I make sure that my wife is not in line behind me, because I don't want her judging me. And as I go through the line, I don't eat anything green. No spinach salad, no lettuce, maybe green Jell-O if it's got enough whipped cream on it, but that's nothing green. I'm going through the line and I'm picking and choosing stuff I like, which is deviled eggs and fried chicken and a roll. That's what I'm getting at a church potluck. How do you eat at a church potluck? Go down the line of the table and you get the stuff that you want. And that's how a lot of people approach the will of God. You know, this part about baptism, I like that part. I need to tell all my religious friends, they need to get baptized. This part about loving my enemies, that's hard. I don't want to do that. All right? We practice potluck obedience. Listen, folks, that's not how it works. There could be no dark corners of my life that I have shielded from the will of God. He gets a say in everything. Remember the wheel? Just weren't enough spokes on it. Every aspect of my life falls under his rule. I must obey God, right? Now, can you see why we would say that? When we're talking about the hard work required in marriage, in that relationship, because ground rule number two is just going to be an application of ground rule number one. Ready? So watch this. Ground rule number two is that I absolutely must let God rule in that relationship. So one just causes two. They just flow right together. I need you to see that. Because God rules all aspects of my life, he rules in my marriage too. As I thought about that last week, I thought about all of the information that we accumulate over life about marriage. Have you thought about that? It starts when we're very, very small children growing up at home. You know, we learn what marriage is about by watching mom and dad. And I know if you're a parent, that needs to freak you out. You need to think about that. Your kids learn what a normal marriage is watching you. And then we get out a little bit and we start experiencing life, like we go spend the night at a friend's house, or we start hanging around other people at church, our families get together, and we start looking at other marriages, and now we're adding more data, more information, learning that some marriages are different than what my mom and dad's is. And then we start watching television and movies, and marriage is displayed there for us, and we start picking up more data, collecting more information. And then when I was engaged to Heidi, before we got married, I started reading some books about marriage, and I collected that data. And after marriage, I've learned lots and lots of books about marriage and collecting all of that data. So we collect all this information over the course of life. My question is, what do you do with it? I mean, some of it's good, right? You may have been blessed with a mom and dad who loved each other and loved God and just displayed exactly what Jesus wanted marriage to be all those years you were growing up at home, right? And I've read some good books about marriage. I recommend books for people to read. There's some good information out there that you can check out and benefit from. But the other thing we know is it isn't all good. Some of it's absolutely the wrong. Some children grow up in homes with mom and dads that model marriage terribly. And yet they learned that was normal. What do you do with that data? I tell you what we do. We judge it. We take this data I've collected and we lay it along beside what God said because of ground rule number one. And I say, does it match up? And anything that doesn't fit his picture, it gets tossed. Why? Because of ground rule number two. God must rule in my marriage. Why is that? A couple of reasons. First of all, because marriage is his idea. Remember, folks, that marriage isn't the product of human evolution, as unbelievers claim, as though over millions and millions of years, we just found this arrangement to be useful, and maybe 10,000 years from now, if a meteor doesn't wipe us out, maybe we'll find some different kind of arrangement that's better or more useful than marriage. Who knows? That is not how this happened. Go back to Genesis chapter 2. Back to Genesis twice in the first 10 minutes, Jeff. Back to Genesis 2. It is God who said it's not good for man to be alone. And it's God who made Eve for Adam. And it's God who joined that first couple together. He is the one who originated this relationship. So here's my question for you. Who knows more about making marriage work than God? I don't care if he has a TV show or she's written lots of books or has all kinds of letters after the end of their name. They don't know better than God. And so all the data that I collect in life, all of it is subject to the will of God. And listen, he has said some things about marriage. Take everything that God said about being a follower of Jesus, and almost every bit of that has some kind of application of to marriage. Ephesians 4:29, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but only such a word that is good for edification, that it may give grace to those who hear. How many have ever paused and thought that that's a marriage passage? But listen, that's got to be practiced at home, just like it needs to be practiced anywhere else. And now you're going to be lining up on the front pew this morning because you're thinking, oh, I have said some things that weren't very edifying like yesterday to my spouse. All that stuff about being a disciple, most of it, folks, has an application to that relationship. And then there are very specific things that God said about marriage. I'm thinking about Ephesians 5, right? Ephesians 5, beginning verse 22, that little segment there at the end of chapter 5, where he talks about wives being submissive to their husbands and husbands loving their wives like Christ loved the church. Jesus says things about how we treat each other. I needed to hear the one who originated marriage about all this stuff. But you know, the other reason that everything else gets judged by God is because of ground rule number one. He's God, and I have to obey him. Doesn't matter what my parents did. It doesn't matter what's popularly accepted or practiced in culture. It doesn't matter what my friends are whispering to me at work. It doesn't matter what the books say, no matter who wrote the book or how qualified they are. At the end of the day, nobody is smarter about this than God is, and he's God. And I have to obey him. Now, I want to add this because I think it's really critical to drop this in at this point. Remember that God is also a loving and compassionate God. And behind every instruction is that love, his desire for our good. And so the other thing that I know is if God has said it, it will be good for me. Isn't that one of the great things about the Bible? I mean, you could pick up some book that some professional wrote on marriage. And I got to tell you, folks, his advice may be full of garbage. I always thought that if you could write a book about marriage, you need to give a summary about your own at the beginning, right? You know, like how many times have you done divorce if you're writing a book on marriage, right? Or if you're a single person writing on marriage, God, you need to admit that up front, right? Because you never know. You never know, can I trust this guidance? Is it good guidance? Does even a person know anything? You do what's in God's book. Because he is the creator and because he's the one who designed this relationship, it will never be wrong. Isn't that cool? Isn't it awesome to know? Look, if I go and do what this book says, it'll always be the right thing. I need to let God rule in my marriage. Okay, let's keep going. This is where it starts getting tough, okay? But you knew that was coming because I used the word hard when I talked about this at the beginning. So number three is hard. Ready? Ground rule number three. I got to do my thing and obey God even if my spouse doesn't. I have to obey God even if my spouse doesn't. Now, I will tell you, that's not the easiest way to do marriage. Marriage is way easier when two people are absolutely committed that I'm going to do life and I'm going to do marriage God's way. But it doesn't always work out that way, right? Some people find themselves partnered with spiritual rebels. I don't want to do what God said. I don't want to do what God said in my marriage. So what if a man is married to a woman who is critical and unkind and has no respect for him? Or a woman is married to a man who doesn't cherish her and care for her and love her like Christ loved the church? What happens if I'm in that situation? It's interesting to me that Peter anticipates exactly that situation. In 1 Peter 3, if you'll look there with me this morning, 1 Peter 3 in verse 1, he anticipates exactly that. 1 Peter 3 in verse 1, in the same way you wives, be submissive to your husbands so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. So isn't it interesting? First, what the verse doesn't say, right? It doesn't say, listen, if you are partnered spiritually with someone that's not interested in serving God, you need to dump them and go find somebody who is. It doesn't say that, right? What does it say? The Holy Spirit says, you fulfill your responsibilities. You be who I call you to be, even if your spouse isn't. And that for a reason, verse number one, so that they may be one. The objective here is to get the rebel back in the fold, to inspire them to want to be who God wants them to be. And the way you do that is you be the person you're supposed to be. Please don't misunderstand. I think it is a terrible circumstance when someone finds themselves partnered with a rebel who won't do what God said. But let me ask you, what is the best hope for righting that situation? I think giving it right back and being ungodly just like they are accomplished, well, I was going to say it accomplishes nothing. That isn't true. It helps the relationship swirl the drain, right? I mean, now we're really at risk of this thing falling apart. So what that means is there may be a season in my marriage when I need to be the glue holding this thing together, even when it's really, really hard. Ground rule number one, I got to keep obeying God. Even if my spouse doesn't want to do that. And someone says, that is really hard to do. It is. That's what Douglas told us back at the beginning, right? Being married 50 years, it's hard work. I think that's one of the flaws sometimes with the efforts to repair broken marriages. I think sometimes the mistake is that people are contracted back together. And so people are having a rough patch in their marriage and they go sit down, try to talk to somebody about that, a counselor, preacher, an elder. And so each brings their list of grievances. And so one spouse puts their grievances on the table, the others puts their on the table. And what happens is we try to mediate and contract them back together. So here's the deal. He promises that he's going to come home earlier from work, not be so committed at the job, and you promise not to nag him when he gets home, right? So we've contracted each other back together. You've got your thing, he's got his thing, and now y'all go home all happy, right? Until he stays late at work and broke the contract, right? And so if he's not keeping the contract, where does that leave her? I don't have to keep it either. We made a deal. He didn't keep his end of it. Hear me on this. That is not God's way. It's the wrong way. God has a better way. God says, you just keep doing your thing. Ground rule number one, you keep obeying me. I do what is right, whether my spouse does or right. Have you ever thought about how that principle actually isn't just a marriage thing, but it flows all the way through Scripture? What did Jesus say about your enemies? If someone is mean to you, you get even or better up the ante, right? And it's not what the Lord said. Jesus said, love your enemies, and then went to the cross and showed us that. And then he said, that's exactly what I want you to do. I want you to love your enemies. My behavior towards someone else is not determined by how they're treating me. I'm even good to my enemies. And that's really hard. And God requires that of me. So I wondered if by this time the young people and the young adults who are single would be sitting back and saying, marriage sermon, not for me. So I need to gather you again because I want to say something to you if you are single and looking or looking soon, right? Most important item on your list. You have a list, right? You know what kind of person you want to marry? You thought about that. Most important item on your list is this. That they embrace rule number one. That the most important thing in the life of this person you choose is that more than anything, they want to obey God. And by the way, you need to be that person too. One of the awful things that happens to young disciples sometimes is they get into their early 20s and they kind of rebel in that season and move away from God and pick a spouse. What a terrible way to do that. You're in the season where you're making really, really important choices. It's vital that you be close to God. You're living rule number one. I want to obey God more than anything else so that you can attract and find someone who believes that like you do. Number four. Ground rule number four is I cannot be wrong in my marriage and right with my God. I can't be wrong in my marriage and right with my God. I will tell you why I say that. I think there are some disciples who recognize I can't just leave because I'm unhappy. And so they feel stuck. And so they are committed because I know I don't have an option for divorce here. They are committed to just stick it out. And that's what they're doing. They're just sticking it out until the end. They live in the same house and they have the same address, but there is no relationship there, no love there, no thriving marriage. So we need to address that. Let me say with all clarity that it has to be more than just sticking it out. There are more things that God expects than just that we both resist the urge to go to the lawyer's office. What do we do, for example, with Ephesians 5? Love your wife like Christ loved the church. How does that square with just enduring her until the end? Ignoring his expectation carries consequences. Back in 1 Peter 3, we read about the wives a minute ago. Down in verse 7, 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, he would continue, you husbands in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. Watch that last phrase. Do you see it? So that your prayers will not be hindered. What's that mean? And me, brothers and sisters, that God has expectations of us in this relationship. And I can't be right with him when I'm wrong with her, right? If I am behaving wickedly toward my spouse or neglecting my spouse or failing to love my spouse, that means that this relationship isn't what it ought to be either. Just sticking it out is not enough. I've encountered over the years, I've been preaching some people who are dismissive of their responsibilities. I've encountered some women who've clearly been influenced by feminist philosophies of the world. We need to be careful about that. And they scoff at the idea of submitting to their husbands. Can I say this to you? When I scoff at that idea, I am scoffing at God. Because the one who made us and created this arrangement for us said that's part of what makes it work. And I've encountered some men who would complain about the responsibility to nourish and cherish their wife and to love them as Christ of the church and to be kind and gentle with them and to recognize their needs and to meet the needs in ways that are special to them. I've had some men respond to that by saying, you know, this is not my personality. I'm just not that kind of guy. You know, I said I loved her on our wedding day. If that changes, she'll be the first one to know about it, right? That's just not the way I am. And listen, I don't say it. I try to be kind than this, but what I want to say is, then you just need to be a different person, which, by the way, is exactly what Jesus intends to do with us, to remake us into different people that look more like him. God has expectations of me. I can't ignore his will in this relationship and be right with him. Because I love him and respect him, I do my best to become the person he wants me to be in my marriage. Rule number five. Rule number five is that I can only change myself. Think about that. I put that on the list because I think anytime we have conflicts with anybody, there is a tendency to see our problems, the fault for our problems, as being all on the other side. Will you think about that? Is that not true? When I have a conflict with anybody, if you have a conflict with your boss at work tomorrow, it is like you will look at that and have in your mind a whole list of reasons why it's the boss's fault. I think that's the way we tend to lean. And I think we do that in our marriages too. You know, every married person keeps a list on their spouse, right? When you were dating, it was all the reasons they were perfect and you ought to get married. After you've been married a decade, that list looks very different, which kind of makes you wonder what happened in the last 10 years, right? And what we typically have done is collected a list of faults and issues that are creating friction in our relationship. And when someone finally comes and sits down, both parties have a list, right? They go, talk about this marriage. Boom, here you go. I got my list of grievances. Sometimes they're written down. And he's got his list of grievances, why it's the other guy's fault. In fact, I think sometimes married couples go and sit down with someone with their list, imagining, boy, when I show the counselor what he's done or what she's done, they will be on my side. And we'll get him told or we'll get her told, right? I know that y'all are smiling when I said that because you're thinking, yeah, that's a bad plan. That is not going to work. And you're right about that. And God has a better way. But it requires some hard things. First of all, it requires acknowledging that in every troubled relationship, in every troubled marriage, almost always there is a fault on both sides. I have never seen the exception to that. And I will tell you, because she is sitting right there two rows back, it is true in my marriage too. When my wife and I fuss, yeah, I know what y'all are thinking. Yeah, we know who's to blame in that. No. Yeah, you said to catch up with me, didn't you? There's fault on both sides. We both throw wood on that fire. And so, it's going to require things from both of us to make it better. Secondly, I can't make her change, right? Everybody has to decide that for themselves. I can't make somebody else change. But I am in complete control of how I think about things, and I'm in complete control of my words and my actions, and I can choose how I behave. So that's the third thing. I can change myself. And remember in that process that my actions are not determined by what she does or does not do. Because I also have this relationship, ground rule number one. I got to keep obeying God. And so when there's trouble, that's what I can do. I can go back and say, what does God want me to be? And I could keep on being that, the glue that holds us together in this season. But I tell you what, the last thing I would say about that is this. When I do that, when I just become who I need to be and I work really hard on that, what I do is I prepare the soil to help my spouse do the same thing. Do you see that? Because listen, when somebody's being a punk in a relationship, everybody wants to be a punk. But if I will be a good guy to my bride, it makes her want to be a good guy in this too. You see how that works? So plug in Matthew 7 in verse 12 right here. See, Jesus has already said all of this. Matthew 7 and 12, you know what that is? Golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Treat other people the way you want to be treated. If you have a rough spot in your marriage, that should be what I get focused on. What do I need to be doing here? How would I want her to treat me? That's who I need to be. Last one. Ground rule number six. There's nothing more important than being right with God. See, we've come full circle, right? I must obey God. Why? Because there's nothing more important than being right with God. Listen, I want to tell you, the stuff we're talking about today, it's hard stuff, folks. This is not easy to do. It is easier to just pack up and walk away from your relationship than to say, I'm not going anywhere. I am the glue that's going to hold this together no matter how bad the storm is, right? And so obeying God even when my spouse doesn't, focusing on me and how I can make this better rather than focusing on them, that is the hard stuff. That's why most people don't do it. But we do. And not just because we want a better marriage. We do because there is a God who designed this relationship, who made me, and who's told me, this is how I want you to behave. This is how I want you to behave in that relationship, even if your partner doesn't. And I'm going to hold you accountable to that standard, and I'm coming, and I will judge you by that standard. I want a relationship that pleases him and brings him glory and blesses my kids. I want to be right with him because there is nothing more important than that. So that's the question as we wrap this morning. Are things right between you and your God? I don't know. Maybe for some of us, that means we got some repair to do on the way home in this relationship. As an aside, I hope one of the things that you'll do, if you've got teenage kids or young adults in your car going home today, I pray that you will not talk about what's for lunch today. I pray that you will go back through the six ground rules. Make sure your young single people understand, right? And then maybe some of us as husbands and wives need to have the relationship. Maybe there need to see some apologies today. I do not look like Christ in this relationship. That is all about me. That is all about my failure. I'm going to do better. Don't add their list on the end of that. Just own your part in it, right? Maybe there needs to be some repentance to each other. Because we want a marriage that endures and thrives. I don't know where everybody is in the crowd today. Maybe there's somebody that's just gone from God altogether. Maybe you've never made the decision to be a Christian, or you have, but you're just a long, long way away from Him. Your path has taken you to a different place. And your greatest need is to square things with Him. Isn't it wonderful that we serve a God who just loves us, and no matter what we've done, He wants us to come home. And so if this morning you're away from Him, we're going to sing a song, and we're going to invite you to come down front here and take this opportunity to make things right with Him. We'd love to help you with that. So if you need to respond, come to the front right now while we stand, while we sing.